This is Michael Edward Miller for WUTC. This Saturday, June 23rd, the Chattanooga Readers and Writers Fair is celebrating writing and reading from 10 a.m. until 4:30 p.m. in the downtown library. Writers will be reading from their work in the auditorium on the main floor, while on the second floor, there's going to be entertainment for children, also readings on the fourth floor, and vendors setting up booths on the fourth floor as well. From noon until 1, there will be an open mic on the plaza in front of the downtown library, along with food vendors for lunch. WUTC's Richard Whittem is speaking with Sherry Poff from the Chattanooga Writers Guild, as well as three of the writers, Finn Billy, Dana Shaven, and Paul Leichert, who are going to be at the fair on Saturday.
The Readers and Writers Fair this weekend is an opportunity for the writers to find out immediately what people think of their work. The goal for any writer, of course, is to get their work in print, and yet the printed version is only one iteration of a piece that's always evolving. Writing and reading may often be solitary acts, but when writers get the opportunity to read their work aloud for an audience, it's clear that, in fact, writing is very much a collaborative effort.
I know, you know, we talk about print being something that we can consume in solitude and in silence.
This is Sherry Poff, a teacher and a writer. She's also a member of the Chattanooga Writers Guild. As a member of the guild, she helped organize the fair.
But the good thing about this fair, and the good thing that people have been referring to having a writers group, the good thing about sharing things out loud is that you sometimes hear it yourself in a way that you did not realize. And it's been my experience that I'll be reading along something I've written, and I think it's just in exactly the right order. And as I'm reading it, I'll transpose a couple of words. Mm-hmm. And then I know, okay, it should be the other way.
It's a gift to get the feedback.
There'll be 12 writers altogether in the auditorium in the Chattanooga Public Library on Saturday. 4 fiction writers, 4 who write creative nonfiction, 4 poets, and 4 spoken word artists. This is Paul Leichert. He writes fiction.
It's a really nice experience to have an opinion shared, whether it's from like a fellow writer who says, yeah, this adjective is kind of, you don't want that there. Or just sort of like a general, hey, that piece was great, or hey, you're an idiot. It's very nice to have that sort of engagement, I think.
The piece I'm actually going to read is called The Light of Day is a Crucible.
This is Dana Shaven. She is a creative nonfiction writer.
And I worked on it for a very long time and revised and did all the things you do. And, you know, months and months later, I sent it out for first reading to my writers group. And they had a whole different take on what I thought I was trying to write about. And I said to them, I said, you know, it's so interesting. I said, it's like you can create a recipe from the very beginning. You can come up with all of the ingredients, put them all together, cook it in your own special way. And when you're done, have no idea what you're eating. That's what writing an essay is like for me often. And so with that essay, I work with a mentor from the Writer's Studio. It's a program in New York City. You can do it over the phone or online or however you want to do it. I worked with her for the entire writing of my book. And she really forced my hand and made me look, you know, much deeper than I ever would have looked without her help. So I worked with her on this essay. And, you know, when I finally got it done, you know, I sent it to her. And I said, I'm so excited about this. I have it all figured out. You know, it's about a guy I went to lunch with, and he sort of, I don't want to give everything away, but it was a very meaningful lunch that changed the way I felt about myself and altered the course of my recovery. Everybody who knows me knows I struggled with anorexia when I was in my 20s. And so this was a story from that time. And so it's been 30 years since I saw him, and I wrote this essay. And in my mind, this essay was all about whether or not I need to go back and thank him for what he did, because it was a huge thing. It was a tiny gesture, but it had huge impact in my life. And so that is what this essay was about. So I sent it to my mentor, and she, you know, we get on the phone, and she says, that's not at all what this essay is about. And I also had, in the meantime, sent it out to be published. I sent it to The Sun and to a few different places. And the feedback that came back and what my mentor said was, she said, this is about your father. I had no earthly idea that this was about my father. And in all of the revisions that I had done, it had been about whether or not to thank this guy, what he did for me, you know, whether or not I had done anything for him, you know, showed him anything about his life, and I was totally off base. So for me, the process of writing creative nonfiction is so interesting because it's like you're writing a message to yourself in the future. You don't know what you're writing about. You don't know why you're writing about it, and you have to write it to figure it all out. And that, to me, is just fascinating. So like I said, it's from an essay called The Light of Day is a Crucible, which is from a larger work that I'm working on, a book called Dinners with Friends, Togetherness as a Radical Act. And it's, I'm not going to go into all that, but anyway, just to set up this a bit, I have a huge crush on this this lead counselor on a psychiatric unit where I'm an intern, and I am not through with my eating disorder in any way, and he invites me to lunch. And so that's kind of the setup for you. Stuart, I say, lunch today? Stuart nods, his hair bouncing and glittering. An electrical current knifes through me at the thought of riding shotgun in the car beside Stuart's glorious thighs. In my imagination, I am already gaping at them, spread intoxicatingly across the driver's seat, doing the muscular work of accelerating and braking. But elsewhere in my body, a terror is growing. For half a decade of lunches, I have not consumed enough calories to power a small child through a nap. In Stuart's presence, I will not be able to separate my crusts from my toasts or my whites from my eggs. Knowing this, that behaviors you can pretend are okay in secret, but cannot pretend are okay in public, equals behaviors that are not okay, is a basic equation that all addicts must solve in their recovery. Just go, says one of the nurses. He won't bite. Okay, I say. Stuart is wrong. Lunch is not fun. I do not ogle the mechanism of his thighs in the car because I'm too worried about what I'm going to eat, and at the same time, praying for something to deter us on the highway, an accident, a fire, a small engine plane crash, so that we'll have to return to the unit unfed. At the deli counter, Stuart stands patiently by while I scan the menu for items that will not be a caloric disaster, my heart heaving itself against my rib cage in an attempt to flail itself to death. Finally, I order what I used to eat when I used to eat, turkey on rye. My teeth rattle, making it sound like turtle on try. I'll have the same, Stuart says, and we sit down to wait for our food.
Even once something is committed to a book, if we wanted to, we could keep working with it and tinkering with it. But at some point, you just say, okay, that's the way it's going to be. You know, I'll move on.
Yeah, I forget who said it because it's such a great line. They said, you know, you don't finish it, you abandon it.
I think that's true. You end up, I say you, when I say you, I mean me, typically. When I go back and read some of my earlier work, and I'm sure we all have the same experience, it's like a sort of a signpost of where I was as a writer and an artist and the way I thought about the world at that time. I even went back and read some of my undergrad creative writing, which is a great experience to read your undergrad creative writing stuff. Oh, yeah, it's great. But I think it's really valuable to look back and say, here's how I've evolved as a writer over time. Who was it? Walt Whitman kept Leaves of Grass was just like fluid his entire life. He just kept revising and releasing new editions. But I think leaving it at a certain point is valuable, at least for the writer, at least for me, because I do have some other projects I want to work on for one thing. But another thing is to be able to say I've evolved. There's an arc to my writing life.
And yeah, at the same time, when you revisit the piece and read it for an audience, well, does that happen that Sherry's talking about, where it becomes maybe relatively minor changes, but you're changing it just the same, right?
Well, I had an interesting experience at a reading when a couple of months ago, I guess it was. I read some of my old stuff, and I got such a positive reaction to it. I wonder, wait a minute. This is old stuff. I've moved on beyond that, but I read it anyway because I like it.
This is poet and storyteller Finn Billy.
But I don't work that way anymore. But then I got such a positive response. I thought, okay, there's something here. There's something here that I might have abandoned and I may need to get back. So it works all kinds of ways in that respect.
I think part of it is that thing of trying to take what's in your head and manifest it, you know, on a page. I think there's always a gap. It's never realized. And I think that's what happens when you go back and look at your old work, is you see more clearly all the ways it wasn't realized, because you remember how big it was in your head and how beautiful and, you know, how, you know, in full bloom it was. And so I think maybe it's not so much that we abandon it. I mean, I know we don't mean that literally, as that you come to a place where you realize this is as far as I can go with getting what's in here onto the page. Yeah. And maybe later I'll be able to do more. But for now, this is the best I can do.
Yeah, it's interesting you should say about realizing on the page what you have in your head. Mm-hmm. I've experienced again and again many, many times that it is created in the writing process itself. It wasn't in here. It appears, and it grows. And then, of course, it cycles back into my dense head, and then sometimes something comes out that's worthwhile. And but the creation in the act of writing seems to me to be the important thing for me.
It seems to me that every time you read it, you're recreating it. And that's what I think is perhaps most compelling about going to listen to somebody read their work. They're not really reading their work. You know what I mean?
No, what do you mean?
That you are recreating it. And so that's why you edit it in your head while you're reading it. And why you're each time that you present it, it's as if it's another proof, and another opportunity to maybe refine it.
Sure.
At the same time, the thing with the musicians is that they're responding to the audience and what the audience is responding to. And I've had that conversation so many times about mistakes, and somebody will say, yeah, that came out of a mistake. That wasn't supposed to, he or she wasn't supposed to say that or play that at that point. They did, and it took it to a whole different place. I would imagine that when you're reading for an audience and you get a reaction to something that you didn't expect, that it causes you to go back and think about what you've written again, even maybe in that moment to think about again. So in that sense, it's organic, and print is one iteration, but it's not the piece itself. And the, you know, if we're an oral people.
We are, and I was just thinking, in the history of mankind, Homer did not make up the Iliad and the Odyssey. He wrote down stories that had been developing for years and years. And people didn't used to be as fixated on copyright and things like that as we are now. So the kind of thing we're going to do at the library, where we have people stand up and read, is, you know, it's a little bit a throwback to that old format of sitting around the fire and telling stories. And I think as solitary maybe as writers imagine themselves to be, there's something really nice about getting in a group with other people who'd like to do the same things you'd like to do.
This is a story. It's not a story. It's a little, some thoughts about writing stories. Feeling like I want to write a story, that I just have to write a story, is a pretty bad starting point for writing a story. Usually in those moments with that feeling, I have no ideas, no reasons really to write a story, no characters in mind, no genesis, no seed, no essence of anything, only the incredibly overwhelming sense that whatever else I'm doing, I ought to be writing a story. That's typically a good time to resist story writing. If there ever was a time not to write, that's it. It's frustrating to really want to write, but to have nothing to write about. It's, of course, good to know that story writing is still that important to me, that I'd drop all else to do it if I really had something to write about. But those moments of manic urgency, though they masquerade as such, aren't real story moments because there's no nugget of idealism. And there only has to be a tiny nugget, but it's necessary. There goes my phone. Worthless. A solid idea for a compelling character, a circumstance I truly wonder about, even just an image or a sense, a homeless guy with a smile on his face, or the color red. Anyway, that is to say, those moments are a great time for me to remember that I'm a writer, but I'm also a human being who does other things, too, necessarily so in some cases. Probably good times to chill out and read a book or bake a cake or paint a picture or figure out how to make some money.
The Chattanooga Readers and Writers' Fair is in the Chattanooga Public Library this Saturday, June 23rd, from 10 until 4:30. Details are on the Chattanooga Writers Guild webpage, crwfair.org. Finn Billy, an avid cyclist, plans to read from a series of what he calls travel poems.
This is from Wisconsin in the Kettle Moraine area where I visited many years ago, actually. It's an old poem, and I call it Uphill Flowers. All I see is uphill flowers. For all I know, the downhill's barren except for blurs and streaks. Out of the rush and up from the dip, flowers show like shooting stars that glow into a heavy air from vacant space. I slow down to catch up with these small worlds and see this flock of stars on stalks of petals stretched for sun and nodding to my labored breath as I pedal uphill again.
For WUTC's Around and About Chattanooga, I'm Richard Winham.